I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Private Education. I am Aisling. Andrea is actually back. My beautiful co-host, she is actually back from Los Angeles, but she's not here because she's still recovering from having flown from Los Angeles and from having spent a beautiful month in America, in the sunshine, and having to come back here and back to work and back to reality. So she's not here. But I am. And actually, before I launch in, I'm going to apologize because we're in a bit of an echoey room, so if the audio sounds a bit wild, I'll do my best to clean it up. But like, if it sounds a bit crazy, that's why. The feedback on last week's episode was basically, if anyone listened, alarm bells. Every single message I got was like, your man is mad, leave him. Now, obviously, being the diplomatic podcast host I am, I couldn't possibly say that. But that is what the feedback was, and I'm just putting it out there. So, yes, Andrea's back from Los Angeles, and coincidentally, my guest today lives in Los Angeles. I am here today in this echoey room interviewing one of Ireland's most successful exports, hairstylist to the stars, and actual stars, like not like, you know, stars like we think, like Mariah Carey level stars.
Not Marty Whelan.
Marty Whelan.
I love Marty.
Andrew Fitzsimons, welcome to Private Education.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Aisling.
I can't believe you insulted Marty at the
top. No, he's just not. You know what? I take it back.
I would do Marty Whelan's
wig anytime.
So, Andrew, for anyone listening who doesn't know your background and what you do and how you got to do what you do,
right?
Give us a bit of an intro.
Well, it's quite a long story.
Oh, I like those.
I'm a hairdresser. I'm from Dublin, from Ballantyre. My dad is from Inchicore. My mom is from Hope. I grew up in Ballantyre, and I've been doing hair for 22 years now. Mm. I left school at 13 to start doing hair. I left Ireland at either 16 or 17, and then ended up in New York at 21, and I've been living in the States since then. I'm 35 now.
Given that your mother is from Howth and your father's from Inchicore,
right,
do you identify as a Northsider or a Southsider? This is very
Jesus.
Important.
Well, okay, so my mom says, I don't know if am I spilling her tea, but my mom says that Howth is County Dublin.
Okay, it is. Yeah, no, you're
not,
right.
Not North, but
I
think
it's still
that she's,
North.
She's a proud Northsider.
Okay, yeah.
Howth feels like, when I do psychedelics, I mean, I've heard, that feels like my ancestral home. Howth feels like if there was a movie of my life and I was very, very, artistic, there'd be some kind of flashback scene.
To Howth.
The day I
to
die.
The cliffs.
Of me literally walking through the touching
Stunning.
The heather.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's my kind of weird Irish lineage-y place is the Hill of Howth.
So what I'm hearing is Northside, we've decided.
Northside, but I grew up in the south side,
yeah.
So I don't know. I'm just a Dubliner.
Okay, you see, I'm a Northsider, so I was delighted
you
when you were, yeah.
Okay, I'm a Northsider then. I'm a Northsider today.
Okay, great. Okay, will we get into like chats? So you went to Paris, you became, over the course of the last however many years, became an expert in hair. You are now living and working in Los Angeles. What is it that you do there?
Well, it's mostly working. I do hair almost every single day. I have clients, lots of different types of clients that I work with.
So not only celebrities, or is it mostly celebrities?
I think it's pretty much celebrities.
Oh, okay. Drop some names, will you?
Well,
we know. I know the Kardashians, the Jenners.
Yeah.
And you have worked with Mariah.
Yeah, I used to work with Mariah
okay.
a lot. When I lived in New York, she lives in New York.
Okay.
When I moved to LA, most of my clients are based in LA also.
Talk to me a little bit about, like, so do you just one day get a call being like, somebody really mega famous wants me to do their hair, and then all of a sudden you're doing it, and then it's like word of mouth from there? Do you know what I mean? Like, how does that go?
Well, at the very beginning, it was my I had an amazing agent. Okay. who really believed in me, and she was putting me up for as many jobs as she could. Mariah came up, and I showed up, and I did her hair. We got on really well. I was more of a Madonna fan.
Like, okay.
This controversial. Yeah. More of a Madonna kind of fan, mm-hmm. Or a Janet Jackson fan. Wasn't that familiar with Mariah. I didn't have anything against her. Just wasn't that familiar. But what I was overwhelmed with was how kind she was and how respectful she was. And because I wasn't a fan of hers, I think her fans would like, they're stans, and they like, or lambs. I'm sure they would talk about how kind she is and how sweet and thoughtful and whatever. But I think she has a perception of what I would call a woman in charge, but people would call like a diva or like someone who's difficult or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't accept that. She's an incredibly kind, respectful person who is professional and knows what she wants and gets it. And then I guess after that, it just becomes word of mouth. If you're able to work with a celebrity at that level, that means you're able to be discreet, you're able to be professional, you're able to be on time, you're able to do your job, plus all of the other things that it takes to be around someone who's high profile. So being able to work with a celebrity consistently basically means that you have all of those attributes. Mm-hmm. So it's easier to use you than an unknown person who might freak out or might tell someone's story or might take photos in someone's home, because usually we're doing hair and makeup in people's homes. Yeah.
A really intimate environment, obviously.
It is. Yeah. And a lot of the time people have kids, they have families. And for someone who may not have the right intentions, it's a day at a celebrity's house. But for me, I'm going to work.
It's your career.
Well, be an office.
It's looking at the big picture. Yeah. So obviously now you have, your own hair care range. It's in Boots. Yeah. I used it this morning. This is a sex and relationships podcast, as you know. I want to ask you, we always try and be incredibly inclusive, and anytime I'm very mindful of language, and I like to be able to make sure everyone listening has, hears themselves.
So you want to be a kind human being.
Basically.
Yeah.
I don't want to be an asshole.
Yeah. To do no harm.
Yes. And I would love to know, I know you do a lot of work with the trans community and charities. Mm-hmm. Why is that so important to you?
Well, to me, growing up in an island where gay people existed but were not really acknowledged, but when we were, it kind of felt like maybe a burden. And growing up in an island where trans people were non-existent socially and still kind of aren't socially, what I've learned from living all over the world and meeting different people and hearing different perspectives is that to protect the most vulnerable. And unfortunately, our society, when we don't know about someone, if we don't know about somebody's story, if we can't empathize with someone, it's very easy for us to disregard other human beings. And I had felt disregarded in my own country growing up. I wasn't respected. I wasn't shown a path of what my life could be, how I could fit into society. So I knew how that felt, and I'm sure so many different people have felt that in different ways. Even being a woman in Ireland, in a society that was built by a system that was male dominated, the Catholic Church, that did a lot of harm to everybody.
Everyone,
straight cis men, straight cis women, queer people, trans people, people of color. The system that was here was not an individualistic one. And I feel like the country before that system was much more natural, was about cooperating together, cooperating with nature. And you see that in a lot of societies where some kind of Western or Anglo or whatever regime has come in to civilize people, mm-hmm. actually taking them further away from their innate humanity and their and their connectivity with other people. And it was actually after leaving Ireland, I realized what the ramifications of that are. And it wasn't until I left Ireland and I didn't even find it in Europe. It was moving to the States and being around so many liberated people, especially New York. New York is like anything goes, and queerness is celebrated, femininity is celebrated, being alternative is celebrated. And I found myself being there and having basically the world in a platter. I could do anything, experience anything. And I realized I wasn't even able to speak freely about sex with my partner because of my upbringing here and the shame that was attached to all of those things. So having a kind of a life experience where I was fighting against so much, I thought, well, it must be so much fucking harder if you are in these instances. It's important to talk about intersectionality. Mm-hmm. I'm queer, I'm gay, but I'm also, I have a lot of privilege from being white. I have a lot of privilege from being a male. So I was like, what would your journey have been if you were a queer female and born in the same year, in the same country, in the same mm-hmm. city, and but had the same aspirations? And what would that have looked like? And when I think like that, I think like, I can't do anything other than think of how I can try to support other people mm-hmm. Who don't have it worse, but who have it different. Mm-hmm. So for me, working with the trans community, I was very lucky to, very early on in moving to New York, meet two incredible women who happened to be trans on a photo shoot, who became instant family to me. And I had never known or intimately known trans people before. And that demystification of just knowing somebody that you shouldn't have to be able to respect somebody or support them, I was afforded. That's why I suppose that wherever I'm going in life and I'm able to utilize my privilege, it's as important for me to do my thing in the world and make myself happy, but also to be able to support other people mm-hmm. that need it.
You don't realize how much of what we experience as Irish people is internalized until Absolutely. You go elsewhere, I think. And a lot of the reason, I started the podcast, and I say this all the time, is because, you know, nothing in my education mm-hmm. or upbringing mm-hmm. told me that talking about sex was okay mm-hmm. or that anything about being gay people, trans mm-hmm. people, mm-hmm. how gay people have sex. Mm-hmm. Nothing of that was ever communicated to me, nor was was there any indication that, you know, any of that could be pleasurable or good or positive or happy or fulfilling. Mm-hmm. And you don't realize until you go elsewhere and you see other things and mm-hmm. you experience other people, like you were mm-hmm. saying, that you realize how much of that is internalized. At what point was it, when you went to Paris or was it when you went to the States, that it fully dawned on you how, you know, did you ever feel held back in that way by Ireland or by your, you know, not necessarily your upbringing, not your parents or anything like that, but I mean like the society in which you grew up?
Right. Well, yeah, I lost my virginity when I was 15, and after I lost my virginity, I didn't have sex again until I was in my 20s because I didn't really understand what it was.
Okay.
And I didn't know how it would pertain to me. And I didn't know how it would pertain to my relationship with my own body, my relationship with other people, how to respect my own body, how to respect someone else's body. None of that was taught to me. None of that was on the agenda. The only thing I had heard about gay sex was you'll die of AIDS. That's what I grew up hearing and knowing. That's the only information that I had. Mm-hmm. So there was a point where I was in a relationship in my later 20s in which my partner, who was a little bit older than me, not much, but a little bit older than me, but who did a lot of work, who was in therapy for a lot longer than I had been at the time, and wanted to be able to openly talk about sex, and I was too embarrassed to. I was too embarrassed. I was in my 20s. I'd already lived in New York for, at that point, at least 6 years, and I'd been having sex and been able to explore my sexuality to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. But I even recognized in those moments the limitation, the self-imposed limitations that I had. And then I was in a safe environment with a person who loved me and wanted to know, because they wanted to be able to share pleasure with me,
yes.
give me pleasure yeah. and receive it too. And I wasn't able to reciprocate. And
I think that's the case for a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of people.
Yeah. And a part of that is when sex is taught to a child. First of all, sex is a part of life. It's how we're obviously we're brought into the world. So to try to protect a child from sex by teaching them only the worst case scenarios of sex, and that's your education from us adults, your caregivers, mm-hmm. Can only that there's nowhere else to go but shame and internalization.
Things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no mention of homosexuality in sex education. There's little to zero discussion on ownership of one's body, of mental sexual health,
mm-hmm.
I realized that, and I had to. I was going to therapy, and I had to say to my therapist, "I am not even. You're my therapist, and I know nothing leaves these walls, and there's no ramifications outside yeah. of this room. But I don't even want to talk about sex with you."
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Why?" She asked me why, and I said, "I wasn't brought up in an environment where you're allowed to,
mm-hmm.
because it's bad, it's dirty, it's
mm-hmm.
it, like literally, I think the slang term in Dublin for having sex is like doing the dirty or like whatever mm-hmm. the fuck."
Yeah.
And it's now to me, sex is not dirty. My body isn't dirty, like nothing. But I had to get over that. I had to demystify and I had to detach what I had inadvertently learned about sex, which was to hide it.
Mm-hmm.
And once I did that work, I was able to go on a whole journey that is as healthy to me as going to the gym or eating healthily. It's about respecting yourself by being honest with yourself, and respecting another person by being able to be honest with them. Because if you're hiding things from yourself, or you think that you're hiding things from a person that you are having a intimate relationship with, it's not the foundation for anything that is sustainable.
No. And it's not the intimate relationship you think it is, because if you can't be, I don't think, truly intimate with someone
right.
unless you're comfortable to have those conversations.
But nobody is set up for success in that way. So if you take a straight boy, if he's not taught how to respect himself, or taught about his body in a positive way, or sexuality in a positive way, and then if he's in a heterosexual relationship and a girl, like, how are you expected to be able to confide? How are you expected to be able to communicate?
Mm-hmm.
So as a, I can't even imagine as a woman taking ownership. Like my mother telling me stories of, she didn't know what sex was until she had sex for the first time.
Mm.
Like that's terrifying.
Yeah.
She didn't know what a period was until she had a period.
Mm-hmm.
Things that are that we all should, we have to either navigate or enjoy. Those being off limits in terms of conversation or communication between parents and children, between peers, whatever education system there is that exists in the country, with so much residue of Catholic Church trauma, there has to be some kind of, I talk about it with queerness, even outside of sexuality, that there always has to be a reckoning in order to be able to move on.
Mm-hmm.
And if women in this country had been treated the way they've been treated by society, we saw during COVID how women are not protected health-wise in this country. My sister had a child during COVID, and men were making decisions over her body, over how many inches dilated she could be before her partner was allowed to be with her. Men made the decision that women's partners couldn't be with them when they had to go in for their scan to see if their baby was healthy or not, or you know. Mm. And in that kind of society, when there's no reckoning, there can't be any healing. And the thing is, I realized that before I could ever enjoy myself sexually or enjoy an energy with a partner that was even just sensual or that was just intimate, even just looking someone in the eyes and mm-hmm. saying, I'm here with you. Mm-hmm. If you can't heal before that, you can't get to that place. No. And you can't heal until you can see your wounds, you're aware of your wounds. Mm-hmm. And we have a really, in Ireland, we have such a good system of brushing things under the carpet and go, do you know what? We're not going to deal with it. We're going to move on. Blah, yeah. blah, blah.
We're experts at that.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? You can't heal like that.
Yeah.
You have to be able to say, do you know what? I wasn't set up for success, or we weren't set up for success, but now let's talk about it. So I really admire what you're doing, because this is a part of the healing. It's, yeah. it's us communicating and talking yeah. about these
it's
things.
It's a small part, but it's, you know, it's doing something. And mm-hmm. I like when you're talking about your sister having a baby, I also had a baby during lockdown and had that experience firsthand of my partner not being allowed in until I was, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And I cannot describe to you how traumatic that was. Mm-hmm. Like the process of the what should have been,
child?
Yeah, what should yeah. have been a really lovely yeah. birth experience
was
totally
by and, men.
Yeah. And I'd watch the news every evening leading up to when I was due. And I'd be seeing, you know,
watching
decisions.
Male politicians going to get haircuts while your partner was not allowed to come in for your scan.
Oh, my God. And I've never felt more like a second-class citizen than mm-hmm. I did.
Absolutely.
During pregnancy and birth.
Right.
And it blew my mind, actually, because right. I would, you know, I host a sex podcast. I'd like yeah. to think I'm living a fairly forward-thinking, inclusive life. And I did not feel included by right. my own country. Do you know what
right.
I mean? And it kind of leads on then as well. It's why we have problems with consent in this country, because right. those conversations aren't no. being had. They just no. aren't.
That's why there's still so much homophobia in this country, transphobia, racism in this country, yeah. because Irish people don't want to deal with a thing that's difficult.
No.
But it's necessary. And the thing is, and something that I really try to talk about is that we are innately brave. We're innately rebellious. We do have it in us. And the promise that we're telling ourselves of what the country is now is just a veneer.
Yeah.
Unless we're actually really supporting people. Mm-hmm. Are we supporting queer people? Are we supporting women? Are we supporting people of color? And how?
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't answer those questions yourself, that means it's not happening.
Yeah.
It's just
yeah.
simply not happening.
Mm-hmm.
And we all deserve that. And I think that I've said it before that I've never seen a society flip so quickly, go a complete 180 from super conservative to very, very liberal. But marriage equality only passed by 1% in this country. And that's just the sharing of fucking assets. That's not anything to do with how we fit into society or mm-hmm. how we're supported in society mm-hmm. other than finances. It's a pity, but I think that people are waking up to the fact that we can't hide our heads in the sand anymore. Conversations have to be had. And this is, we're innately storytellers. We should be able to talk about our experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I think if enough women and queer people and even straight men are able to fess up to where they are, where they're struggling, where the roadblocks have been, we can all see unity in that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And people who we didn't see ourselves in before, we're finally able to see that connection mm-hmm. now.
Yeah.
Whether it's in a queer person that you didn't know before, or a person of color, a person of different religion or different sex, simply to be able to hear the roadblocks that were in front of them and how it affected them and what they think that they can do to find salvation for themselves. That can only have a knock-on effect and help other people
mm-hmm.
and remind us how similar we are. And we have very similar obstacles. And we have all been through similar types of situations where we felt isolated or misunderstood or confused or whatever it is, and be able to then therefore support each other. If we're pretending it isn't happening or it hasn't happened, then we can't connect like that.
No. Do you feel, I don't know what your relationship status is at the moment, but
single as fuck.
Single as fuck. Do you feel like you've found salvation for yourself personally in terms of past relationships, your dating life, your single life? Do you feel like you've healed personally?
In a word.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
No. In a word, no. But to me, that is a cradle-to-grave journey.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any part of my life where I'm like, okay, I'm done now. I don't want that. That to me, that's death. But I've done a lot of work. Outside of sexuality, I'm a Leo. All of my signs are fire signs. I've no grounding signs at all. So I've had to create that for myself. And I've had to learn about myself, had to accept myself. In a lot of ways, and I've had to try to learn to accept other people, because what I've learned for me is that it's very easy to project on another person all of the things that you want for yourself, or what you want for yourself in a relationship, or what you want from another person. And you're able to see another human being, and I've had been thinking about all these different things for years and years and years, and project all of them. You're supposed to be my boyfriend, so that means you have to do this, this, and this, and this, and this. And what I've really learned is that if you meet somebody, I used to really try to jump ahead and have ownership. If we're in a relationship, that means you're not going to be with someone else. If we're in a relationship, I don't have to worry about this. If I push this, or we speed this up or whatever, instead of actually just chilling and getting to know somebody and figuring out whether you accept them or not. Do I accept you? Can I claim you? Mm-hmm. And I've been single for a year now, out of choice. I think I've gone on 2 dates in the past year. I'm really in a place where I realize I have a lot more work to do in terms of accepting myself, because if I don't accept myself, it's impossible. If I don't claim myself, I can't expect to be claimed by another person. Not that I want to be owned by another person, but someone to say, yeah, I'm standing beside this person because I believe in this person. I need to be that for myself first. And that's definitely a journey. I've never been more equipped for that. But I still don't even think that I'm ready to be in a relationship. Not for any other reason than like you said at the very start of this podcast, I want to do no harm. So I definitely have aspirations in life. I definitely have issues, like personal issues that I work through constantly. Try to be free of from childhood or from experience in life, being in a crazy world environment, and I need to get to the point where I do the least amount of harm to myself and the least amount of harm to another person. Support myself as much as I possibly can, and support another person as much as I possibly can. And that doesn't just happen. Mm-hmm. That doesn't just land on your lap and then you're great. Some people have very little conflict with other people, but for me, I want to be able to go deep with somebody. And in past relationships, I haven't been able to go deep because I couldn't go there myself.
What do you think stopped you going deep?
I didn't know what was on the other side. I didn't know what was on the other side of it. I'd been like teenage years, like getting drunk and then crying about something, and you didn't know you're upset at something, and like, you know, that, like those deep down things of like, oh, why do I have this blockage of whatever? And that was the relationship, like the relationship I'm referring to is like my longest relationship. We were together for 4 years, which is not that long, but for me it was. and couldn't talk about sex, couldn't talk about what I really wanted because I felt some kind of guilt about that. I realized after a while, I was like, okay, you don't accept yourself. You have to accept every part of you. You have to accept the strength, but you have to accept the parts that aren't so strong or aren't so together. Mm-hmm. And if you can accept those things and then choose to try and support yourself, then you can do that with another person. Mm-hmm. And that's what you deserve back. And now I realize that that's what I want, then that's the only type of relationship I'm willing to have.
I would imagine, I don't know, I don't have a high profile. As someone who is relatively high profile and who works with people of high profile, do you see trust in relationships as a blockage for you? Does that hold you back?
That's the first wall.
Okay.
That's the first wall that I have. My job is one of my biggest passions. It's been the fuel for my trajectory in life. It's brought me to so many different places and allowed me to exist in different places, not just work, but exist in different places and with different types of people. And it's been such a blessing in so many ways. But also with the type of work that I do, there's outward visibility that fits into a narrative of excess, of beauty, which I love. I'm an art lover. I'm a lover of beautiful things, including people, which I find everybody beautiful. But the outward appearance of my job definitely has, and living also in LA, a place where it attracts people who want to be famous or their life to look a certain way rather than really be a certain way. Definitely I've noticed that, and that's probably why I haven't been dating, but I've been attracting people who want to attach themselves to the outward image of my life rather than me. So I definitely have a wall up because I'm a sensitive person, but I also I do want to at some point be in a relationship. I do want to have a connection with somebody like that, but I know it's not going to be born out of any kind of energy. Like, it's just not going to have anything to do with my career. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I definitely have a involved screening process, which is my intuition. And when I lived in New York, it was much easier to date. People move to New York because they're internally motivated. Everyone lives in a tiny apartment. Everybody takes the subway together. You're there to work your ass off and be around the best and improve yourself from the inside out. Whereas people move to LA because success to them is what they can prove. Like, it's this car, it's this lifestyle, it's this partner, it's this house. And that they attract two different types of people. So being a person who doesn't feel very LA but lives there and I'm around people who want their life to look successful or be success adjacent, it definitely has made me put my guard up, and I definitely do have my guard up. But I'm also at the point where I'm really focusing on myself and my career, my internal world and my external world, where I don't need that right now. I don't think my person is in LA. I live there right now. I'm definitely not going to live there forever. But it's not something that I'm focusing on for right there, because I don't think, unless there's some kind of weird anomaly where just an amazing guy is in LA and we happen to cross paths and they see the real me. But I'm not holding my breath for that in LA, because dating in LA is fucking trash. It's really trash. But I think at some point I will want to live more simply and be around less of the things, mm-hmm. less of the shiny things.
Do you think when you depart LA, your involved screening process will stay as involved?
No, because I won't have that around me. There won't be that in front of me. Basically, I'm an islander. I'm from Ireland. I don't think I can deal with the rain, but I'm willing to live in Jamaica. I'll be leading with myself. I have to lead with my career. I have to lead with what I do, because what I do is a big part of who I am. It's a big part of my day-to-day life. It's most of my time, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy with that right now. That's what I wanted, and that's what I want. But there will come a point where I want to live more simply. I prefer to live on an island, and I prefer to lead with my wisdom, my personality, my chosen self, mm-hmm. Rather than live in an environment where I have to prove myself before I walk into a room. Mm-hmm. I want to be in that kind of environment.
Well, when you said you went on a couple of dates in the last year or so.
Yeah.
What was it that made you go, okay, I'll go on that one?
A lot of the time people are in the same kind of business, whether it's, I need to stop dating models, basically.
what a complaint to have. God, I need to stop dating models.
Okay, well, you know, you can only stare at a painting for so long. I suppose, like, being in the same kind of business. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Now I, like, and I'm not saying I'm a celebrity. I'm not a celebrity. But now I get why celebrities date other celebrities.
Yes.
For real. Mm-hmm. Or people with certain experiences date other people with those experiences, because it is exhausting trying to show somebody who you are when they have a different type of idea of who you are. So yeah, it definitely helped that one or two guys have been in the same type of business. Mm-hmm. But when I realized that we're on separate journeys and they want to do this, then I realized, okay, well, this isn't a foundation that we can step into together. Then it is just what it is. Mm.
It would have been very easy for you to say, you know, when I asked you about your dating or whatever, it would have been very easy for you to say, well, I'm just so busy and my schedule and blah. Like, mm-hmm. is that an excuse you make to
all
people?
Yeah. All the time. Okay. All the time. Hopefully they're not listening to this right now, but, but yeah, but no, look, we can all blame whatever, that mm-hmm. being too busy for anything. Mm-hmm. If something is a priority or you want something, you make time for it. So I recognize right now I would be doing my disservice by seeking a relationship or trying to seek out a relationship. When, as I said, I know that I have a lot more internal work to do to support myself in a relationship in the future and support someone else in a relationship in the future. But also I actually don't have the time, because to me, luxury is being able to sleep in my bed for more than 5 nights in a row. Like that complete luxury, not having to travel. I would love to have a dog. It wouldn't be fair to have a dog. It wouldn't be fair to have a dog. It wouldn't be fair to have a boyfriend.
Fair enough. You know what I mean? Yes, very fair.
They're very similar, but dogs might be easier.
I would imagine, probably. And at least you can just get a babysitter for a dog. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or a dog sitter,
maybe
should say.
Boyfriends need a babysitter too, because so I don't want to be it.
Which is fair. Mm. As a hairstylist, mm-hmm. you, I would imagine, have a lot of one-on-one time in a chair or behind mm-hmm. a chair with your celebrity clients.
Right.
You know the way. I mean, in Ireland, I don't know if it's the same in Los Angeles, but in Ireland, the first thing your hairdresser says to you is, so are you going on any holidays? And you chat, and then you talk about your family, and then you talk about, oh, well, I went on a date, or I'm seeing this person, or my boyfriend did this, or whatever.
Right.
Do you have those normal, just everyday chit-chats? And in that environment, have you learned things? Have you gleaned any wisdom about relationships from those intimate, one-on-one, personal chats?
Well, yeah. Well, one thing springs to mind is I don't, like, breakups are really difficult for everybody, but working with clients that I work with, I'm like, I can't imagine if I had to see my partner on TV every day a breakup, or seeing them on billboards every day, or me being having to be written about them. Like, God almighty. Because when I'm, if a breakup's bad, I want to pretend that they died. Mm. Like, literally, you're dead. but like, that must be really difficult. My job is my job. I think that I've got to where I've gotten to in my career because I'm not celebrity obsessed. I don't want to know the gossip. I don't want to go to the parties with you. I want to do my job to the best of my ability and go home. So that inherently gives some kind of comfort to clients, because they can feel that I'm not asking invasive questions. I'm like, hey, so what's up? Mm-hmm. But I have one client that I work with probably the most, who has been there for every breakup has given me the most incredible advice. And yeah, we're talking about who we're dating at any given time. We're talking about guys. We're talking about our sex lives. We're talking about everything. Everything you talk to a friend about. So I don't have that with... I don't become friends with clients, and I don't choose to become friends with clients. But sometimes people just get in and you're just compatible. I'm very lucky to have one client that I see most often, that I have that kind of relationship, that I'm able to be there on a personal level and they're able to be there for me because we choose to be, because we just are that to each other. I don't necessarily need that at work, because do you know what? Oh God, we've all been through bad breakups. And then sometimes when you just go to work and you pretend it's not happening for a while, it's just a little bit of respite. Mm-hmm. And you could, like, for my job specifically, I have to show up. I have to be the sponge. I have to be the one who absorbs, not the one who projects on other people. I've gone through everything. I've gone through, like, my father passing, breakups, like all of the things that you go through life from teens to 30s. Mm-hmm. I've gone through on set or working almost every single day and have to navigate through. So very rarely in work, it's about me sharing those intimate moments of my life with clients. Mm-hmm. It's more the respite I get from just switching into work mode and switching on your smile and trying to be helpful for other people. Mm-hmm. But once in a while, a client will become a friend, and it actually means a lot. And Chloe is that person for me. Mm-hmm. And like, when my father passed in December, and her father also passed when she was in her teens, I think. And she called me every single day for I don't know how long. Just to check on me, because I've had situations in my life where people in my life, their parents or loved ones, have passed, and I didn't know what to do. And a lot mm-hmm. of people don't know what to do, so they mm-hmm. do nothing. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I'm here, I'm here. Mm-hmm. I'm like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm okay today. Are you okay today? Oh no, I don't know. This is just so weird. She's like, yeah, it's fucking weird. And do you know what? Sometimes I felt like this, and then sometimes I felt like this, and was really there. That mightn't have happened in work. It just happened that that's who she is, and I'm very lucky to be around such a loving person, and can also be there for her. And the fact is that I do work so much that actually, like, talking about it now, I realize how special that is, because I'm a type of person who doesn't like to I guess it's not putting your problems on another person if that person really loves you and wants to support you, but I'm very hesitant to share my own, like, personal difficulties. Mm-hmm. Sometimes because I don't want to accept it myself. Sometimes I don't want to feel like a burden. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, like, work, money, career, aspirations aside, people just show up in really difficult situations, and they're the moments that you really remember.
Mm-hmm. I like the description that you gave yourself of being a sponge. Like, you, when you show up or when you're in any professional situation, you're not the, you know, the information giver, you're the person who's receiving a lot of stuff. Does it ever, like, do you feel like you're an empathetic person? Because I find sometimes I take other people's things on. Do you ever hear something or listen to a story from a client and take a learning from it, or are you just there as almost a sounding board?
Well, I try to be real, and I try to give real advice. Mm-hmm. For some people, I've recommended therapy because that's worked for me in certain ways. Some people I just stay away from, like, I stay away from giving too much or having too much input. Mm-hmm. Because it's not my place. But I really try to be real, and most of the people that I work with consistently, so if I feel comfortable, like, giving real advice, I'll be like, do you know what, I don't know if this is what you want to hear. Mm-hmm. But I tend to be that person. Mm. To people.
Do you find as an Irish person, because sometimes I think we are very grounded. And I mean, you were saying you're Leo and you're not particularly grounded, but I think just by virtue of growing up the way we did.
No, absolutely.
There is a level of straightforwardness and honesty and, you know, shooting from the hip. And we kind of say what we feel. And, like, when I give advice, I quite often give advice that I don't think is the advice that's being sought.
Right.
You know, but it's what I think is right. Do you feel like you do that as, you know, as an Irish person?
Yeah, I think that's kind of innate to us.
Yeah.
What I've had to learn is not give unsolicited advice, because this is what I'm a bossy Leo, so I kind of love to do that. Everybody's momager, but learning that to let people know that you're there for them first, allowing them to come to you when they're ready. But yeah, I think a lot of the time when I'm giving advice, it's like, look, it's this, or look, did you ever think about it like this? Mm-hmm. I have never found it helpful when someone just agrees with me. Mm-hmm. And that's not what I'm looking for in mm-hmm. life.
Yeah.
So I definitely try to be a person who is able to see things from, like, if my place is I'm a third party or I'm an outsider in a situation, I'll try to be as measured and really give a perspective from my inner wisdom, and that be it. Mm-hmm. This is coming from my understanding of life, and consider this. But it also, advice can be used as manipulation by people very, very easily. So I also have to be very aware of that. Is that before I went to therapy, I didn't know how to navigate the world other than manipulate it. And I didn't do it in a malicious way. I didn't know that's the only way I knew how to navigate the world. Mm. And even in relationships, I thought, well, like, okay, well, I don't like this. So if I give this advice, then that'll make them think of this and blah, 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 blah. Instead of going, what is best for that person? What do they actually need to hear, instead of like your perspective? So I don't give advice when a situation is hot sometimes. Mm-hmm. I don't give advice when I feel triggered mm-hmm. or I feel tired or I feel lonely or mm-hmm. my therapist, it's called HALT. If you're happy, angry, lonely, or tired, don't trust your own thoughts. And so I tend to not even give advice to other people in those moments, because they can come from a really childish place in me or an immature place. So yeah, all I can offer myself, I suppose, and other people is a perspective from, hopefully, if I'm saying those words, from my highest self, mm-hmm. from my highest vibrational frequency.
I'm trying to think of the last time I wasn't either happy, angry, sad, or lonely.
I think I was maybe like five.
Yeah. I'm like, when was the last time I wasn't one of those things?
Literally.
Your 15-year-old self who lost his virginity and didn't know what sex was, mm-hmm. if you could talk to him now, what would you say? What would your advice be about sex, relationships, life? What would you tell him that would make things a bit easier for him?
But do you know what? It wasn't a traumatic experience. I was aware. I knew what I was doing. I knew what I wanted. So I don't honestly think I needed advice in that moment. I think it was after that. It was the moments after that of like, oh, that's what it is. How do I fit into this? It would be, I don't even know what advice I could give myself at that age in Ireland at that time. Because it would have to be a long conversation. Yeah. It would have to be a lot of unpacking, a lot of demystifying, a lot of self-acceptance that I probably wouldn't have been able to access, because when you feel like an island, when you feel like you're alone in something, it's hard to find yourself in an area of connectivity with another person. I don't like to bullshit and say, okay, I have no regrets in life, but that's something that I had to go through what I had to go through. I grew up in Ireland I dealt with what I had to deal with. I think now it's more so, how do I come back to Ireland now and talk about these things? How do we have these conversations with whatever my little wisdom is or my perspective is now? How do we have those? Because it's not uncomfortable for me anymore. It would have been 10 years ago, this would have been an uncomfortable conversation, and it would have been a very different conversation. But I'm very comfortable talking about sex, and I'm very comfortable talking about connectivity now. So to me, I don't think I would give myself any advice. I think I prefer to give advice to the gay 15-year-old in Ireland today.
Mm-hmm. And what would that advice be? Just...
is that you deserve pleasure. You deserve love. You deserve to be seen as beautiful. You are beautiful. You are worthy. You have a place. You have a space. And just have sex. Go have sex. Go have sex with people. Be safe.
You are so on brand right now, Andrew Fitzsimons.
But like, go have sex. Go, literally, go have sex.
That is the final line from Andrew Fitzsimons signing off. Go
to Boots and buy my products, but also go have sex.
Yeah. I mean, like, what a perfect way to end. Andrew, thank you so much for joining me on Private Education. You. And for everyone listening, yes, Andrew's products are available at Boots. And his advice is go have sex. Thank you so much. And until next time, stay safe, have fun. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.